Go ahead, Matt, and make the announcement.
This is Matt Ascione for the record. Welcome to the Who Is Working Group on Wednesday, the 10th of April, 2013. If I can please remind everyone to speak into the microphone when speaking, to state their names before speaking, and to speak slowly and clearly for the interpreters. Thank you.
Hi, hello everyone. This is good to see all of you here. My name is Carlton Samuels. I'm the chair of the Who Is Working Group for the at-large. And we are going to be speaking in the next hour or so about Who Is topic. If you see on the screen there to the right, we have an agenda. The idea here is that we want to give an update of where we are with Who Is, and we would have some different perspectives that would be addressed. You see on my left-hand side a couple of the players that we'll be calling on in the next little while. So without further ado, we have an hour, so I would like to start by asking ICANN Legal to give us an update on the Who Is negotiations.
Thanks, Carlton. This is Samantha Eisner, Senior Counsel with ICANN. I've been a member of, or I've been part of ICANN's negotiating team for the RAA since November of 2011. I know I've come to speak to different groups within the ALAC regarding the RAA over that time. I don't know if the members of the ALAC have had an opportunity to be at the RAA session that happened on Monday afternoon. So what was discussed there was, on March 7th, I know that the ALAC is aware that a draft version of the RAA was posted for public comment, and that draft version was not a fully negotiated document. Rather, it reflected many agreements in principle, but also highlighted a few areas of difference between the registrar's negotiating team and ICANN. Since that time, ICANN and the registrars have been negotiating at a furious pace. We've been meeting almost every other day to really try to bring home the issues that we had identified as outstanding. And we've continued to meet while we were here in Beijing. And what was announced on Monday is it's not done, but we have essentially reached agreement in principle over all the areas in the negotiations, which, is a great relief to say after the almost 18 months of negotiating this document. We have a lot of key things that are in there now. If you recall, we went to the table with the 12 law enforcement points, as well as the GNSO ALAC joint drafting team recommendations that have been worked on previously after the 2009 RAA was approved. So those were both part of the considerations of what ICANN brought to the table in how we were negotiating. And we've achieved many of the objectives in there. We now have an obligation for the registrars to verify, to first of all validate that the Who Is information that they receive and also the account holder information has all the correct fields filled in, is in the correct formats, and also the registrants have agreed to verify either the phone or the email address of both the registrant and the account holder if the account holder is different, which is something that you've never seen before. And I know that there's been a lot of attention within the ALAC regarding how do you address Who Is inaccuracy issues, and we think that moving forward with some verification and validation requirements is really one of the first ways to get there. We also have a Who Is SLA. We have abuse point of contact information that has to be posted. We have information to ICANN on resellers and affiliates. There's a lot more information that's going to be available now under this new RAA, and it's a whole suite of protections that we think give everyone, not just the registrars who are actually undertaking great costs to revamp their systems to figure out how to take on these new obligations, but to people who are accessing WHOIS, to people who are using websites. You know, it gives us all a little bit more trust in the chain of registration. So that's a really high-level update, and I'm open to answer any questions you might have.
Thank you, Sam. Moving right along, we're still with the WHOIS update, and we have a friend here, Michele Nilan, who's from the registrar constituency. He's always been involved with us in the at-large, and we'd like to hear from Michele on this update.
Do you want me to say a long reply, a short reply? I mean, what would you like me to say, Carlton?
A short reply.
Okay, thanks, Carlton. Thank you for giving me parameters to which I should work. With respect to the 2013 RAA, I've been pretty clear about my feelings about it at various stages along the way. ICANN staffers will testify to the fact that I have not been the happiest of person at various times over the last few months. But I'm quite happy with what we've hopefully got. Waiting to see the final language before I crack open the champagne or whatever.
you and us.
Exactly. And I mean, the thing is this. I mean, from our perspective, I'm a European-based registrar, as those of you in the ALAC who know who I am know. I'm based in Ireland. So therefore, one of my concerns around everything to do with WHOIS and anything to do with any contract with ICANN or anybody else, I had concerns about the obligations under European law, which up until now were not clearly delineated within ICANN's contracts. As I said, I have not seen the final wording, but ICANN is now respecting the concept of local law, which I welcome. And if you were in the GAC board session, was that yesterday?
Yeah.
Okay, sorry. We're on ICANN time, so I lose track of days and things. You'll see that the European Commission also mentioned this, and I think even Suzanne from the US mentioned this. With respect to a lot of the issues that the ALAC has been concerned with around WHOIS, if all the fields are validated, in very simple terms, that means you're going to have a lot less crap. I mean, a lot less crappy data. As I say, I haven't seen the exact language, but if, for example, you work on the basis that, and this is just an example, and please, it's an example, I don't want this coming back to bite me in 3 months' time. A UK postcode is a mixture of letters and numbers. A US postcode is numeric only. Most places in Ireland don't have any postcode. So if you see somebody putting in a postcode of 123456 for an address in Ireland, then you know it's rubbish. It's rubbish data. If you see somebody putting in a telephone number that has too few digits or too many digits or doesn't follow the correct format, then you know it's rubbish data. So that immediately removes a lot of the concerns that you guys have been expressing for a long time. And obviously, there's other areas where we'll probably still have a disagreement and you will still pound on us. And that's okay. As long as we're able to do this civilly, I'll still engage with you from time to time.
Thank you, Michele. We're very happy that you're at least on the way to happiness with that one. Next person I'm going to call on is Alan Greenberg. As you know, Alan has been instrumental and one of the crafters of the at-large ALAC WHOIS position. And I'm going to ask Alan now to give us his impressions of the 2013 RAA. Alan?
Thank you. Most of what I was going to say has already been said by Sam or McKaylee, because the achievements on the negotiating side, I think, are very much achievements on our side also. I've been reading the RAA for a good number of years right now, and I used to characterize it, Sam, forgive me, it was before your time, I used to characterize it as if someone was trying to write a contract in as bad a way as possible, especially from ICANN's and users' perspective. They couldn't have done a better job. Now, they probably could have done a worse job. This contract is, I'm not sure pleasure is the right word, but it's so much farther, so much cleaner. We're actually defining the terms that we use, and in some cases, very critical ones like resellers. There are some words there about privacy and proxy servers, not as much as we want, but as much as we could get in, given that we have no formal relationship with them. The WHOIS accuracy statement or specification with penalties, we've already talked about. The registrar's rights, rights and responsibilities. A new mechanism for renewing or changing the contract, amending the contract in future years, which has some clarity, instead of being subject to seven different interpretations, and local law, presumably, is there. And I'll point out to McKaylee, the ALAC, in a number of statements, has said, please fix that.
I never said that you didn't, Alan, in fairness. I never said that. I mean, we disagree on some of these elements, as you know, but I never suggested for an instant that you didn't say something positive about including local law somewhere.
I'm just trying to take ALAC credit for supporting that over the last little while when it wasn't always supported by other groups. So overall, you know, is this the optimal RAA from a user perspective? Probably not. I know we could find things that we would want to change and do better, but it is so much of an improvement and a mechanism for changing it in the future that I'll be delighted when I see the final language and believe it's going to get signed.
Thank you, Alan. Next to me is Holly. Holly Raish has been, she's chair of the Registrant Rights Working Group of the At Large, and she also is a collaborator and things who is, since WHOIS is vested in the RAA, which is the principal document around which the Registrant Rights Working Group coalesces. Holly, your impressions?
Thank you, Carlton. Holly Raish for the record. Sam, when you started to say we've finalized things, the first thing that came to mind is I hope the way they've been finalized them is to have been entrenched what is there and that what we've read is not going to be changed, because a few of us have actually read all 400 pages and absorbed them. So I would hate to think we've read that and then it will be retracted. But a bit further, I'd like to point out something that's really critical, what you were talking about in terms of verification now includes something which is incredibly important, which is if there is a problem that is brought to somebody's attention, they actually have to do something. There has to be a verification. And if things prove to be inaccurate, well, in fact, you're going to have to do something about that. And it includes termination or suspension. So, and that's not in the RAA. It's now in the actual and another in this one of the specifications. And Michaela, I'd also point out what I thought was probably a big step forward. Some of the stuff about privacy proxy starts to actually look like a bit of privacy law that just has never been there. Now, it's not 100%, but it's a lot better than what was there. And it forecasts the development of an actual specification, which obviously will require a lot more work. But that, to me, says in fact there's been a lot of progress on that front as well. So as long as the 400 pages read were not in vain, I'll be a very happy person.
Sure. This is Samantha again. Thanks, Holly. So there will be some changes to the document, but it is not a wholesale change. The 400 pages that you read are not in vain. You might have to reread 20, but not really. You know, if you look at the RAA itself, it's a we had various red lines, but it's about a 30-page document. You'll probably see changes to a few of those pages, but in those areas where we identified that there are areas of difference, we're not looking at making wholesale difference. And so, you know, we focused our attention on those areas. And so, you know, those will be put back out to see. And I just want to make one thing clear. And I know that it's a very easy concept for me as a lawyer, but I've learned as I've been talking to people this week that it's not as apparent as I think it would be. Just based on my training, that a specification that's attached to a document is part of a binding contractual commitment. So I just wanted to make sure that everyone understood, because I've heard it multiple places, that some people think that having something in a specification gives it less importance in terms of a contract, but that's not the case at all.
Thank you, Sam. Thank you for bringing that up, because we've had that conversation in our working group as well. Alan, you wanted to make a quick response.
I think Sam just answered it already, but can we assume that with perhaps a few minor exceptions, the only things that were changed in this last couple of weeks are things that were contentious issues?
That's right. So the areas where we had the boxes and the side-by-side text put together, that's where you're going to see 99% of the changes. If you did notice the specifications, we identified some of them as ICANN's position so that they were not posted as a negotiated position. There are some very minor changes to a couple of those documents. Like the registrar information specification, there's going to be a very minor change just in terms of confidentiality issues and such. The place where you will also want to look for further change in terms of the specifications is the proxy and privacy specification. Because what has happened there is, the document that we posted on March 7th looks a lot like a mini contract unto itself. It had a lot of legal language in it and a lot of operational language in it. And so what has been done with the assistance of the registrars is to really extract it, as Carlton just said, back to the high-level principles that are in there, but to make it a really, actually a fairly easy-to-read document that's not, it's about 2 pages long now as opposed to the 5 pages of text that were there. But it still has those main points of registrars commit to have information on their processes for relay or their processes for customer service and those types of things available on their website. So that's the other place to look for major change.
Thank you, Sam, for that. Alan, you wanted to come in here?
Yeah, I've got to
go to Michele.
I'm here running out of the GNSO meeting, and I've got to get back to that. I just wanted one comment. There's been a lot of comments about how outrageous number of pages you produced, and I personally want to thank you. A large number of those pages were just different views of the RAA to allow us to easily see what's changed since last June, what's changed since 2009, what's contentious between them, and it made the job of analyzing it infinitely better. So whoever it was on either side, or whoever the clerical person was who was inspired to do that, thank you. It did make a very difficult job a lot easier.
Thank you, Alan. I wanted to echo that. Yes, it was very easy for me to follow what the negotiations were and what the kind of language that I should be aware of and be on guard against change. So thank you for that. Michele.
Yeah, just very, very briefly, just since we're talking about the specifications, one thing which I think we haven't mentioned so far on this panel is the standardization of who is output. Now, this, look, I'm a registrar. You know, if I was really scummy or scummier than you think I am, having standardized who is output would probably be the worst thing ever. But the reality is for us, for the registrars, having to parse programmatically the who is of every other registrar on the planet causes us an operational bloody nightmare. Now, I know Steve Shang's going to talk about, you know, the future replacements and all that stuff later on, and we're all looking forward to that show. It's great. Sorry, Steve. But, you know, the standardizing who is output, for us, it means one regular expression. We'll be able to suck that in. We'll be able to parse it. If we can't parse it, then we know there's something wrong. But at the moment, I'm seeing, you know, my staff dealing with multiple transfer failures per week because we're getting domains transferring in from registrars we haven't dealt with, who are using weirder and weirder and weirder output, who are putting all sorts of bizarre characters into the who is. I mean, I don't care what they put above and below the contact bits, but there's some guys. I mean, I've seen stuff with blink tags. I mean, come on. It's, you know, it's the 21st century. You shouldn't be allowed to use a blink tag, but they're putting blink tags into who is. So, I mean, the specifications around that makes life a lot easier for everybody. I'm sure ICANN's compliance team can probably speak to how that might make their lives easier when they need to check things. But from us, operationally, it makes life a lot easier.
So that, Michele, because you just gave me a good segue to the compliance team. Maggie and her team, they're here. And I would love to hear the response from the compliance team about the 2013 update and what they think.
Owen Smigelski, contractual compliance manager with ICANN, for the record. Just so though we don't take up more time, just be brief and restate the good things that Sam and Michele and others have said. There's been a lot of progress on who is inaccuracies and data that's actually going to make enforcement a lot easier for us. The contract's clearer. What actions have to be taken are clearer. There's more verification, and all of that will clean up the data and also make it easier, you know, for us in terms of when we do have to take action. So it simplifies everything for us, and I think that's good, you know, overall for the entire internet as well. I don't really think there's much more to say because everyone else has said it. You know, it's good, and we look forward to it. The other thing is that, you know, that will make it easier for us as well is there's the phase-in, so it won't be immediately operational, so we'll be able to adjust our systems and everything like that so that we'll be ready for it once that does go live and is implemented.
Thank you. Thank you. That is very encouraging to hear from the compliance team, at least. You know, they at large has had a engagement with the compliance team for quite some time, and part of our concern was that the compliance team was literally working with one hand tied behind their backs on this, and maybe to hear from them that there have been some improvements certainly is encouraging. We're going to move to the next item now, and you know we are very close here. So we now have a RAA that is getting closer as fit for purpose, and there's been some more on the plate because we are now contemplating some new developments, which includes a new registrant data service. And we have some folks here who are going to speak to us about it from the SAC. We have Steve Sheng and Francis Garius. And without further ado, you're on.
Thank you. Thank you for inviting us to give you a quick update on the a replacement of WHOIS protocol. I have in the room Olaf Kochman, the IETF working group chair, to give us an update. I just want to give a quick introduction. There's ongoing work both on the ICANN sphere and in the IETF sphere. So in the IETF, the WHOIS working group is developing a new protocol for registration data direct access. And on the ICANN sphere, the SAC, the Security and Stability Advisory Committee, have produced a report, SAC 51, that calls for the community to evaluate and a replacement of the protocol. So I think the WHOIS issue has been an issue with the community for many, many years. And I think, among other efforts, this is another shot, added. And I think from our perspective, both the technical community, and the policy community need to be aware of, the activities from both ends so that they can be closely aligned and feedback, given in both directions. So it's not only a one-way street. It's both a give and take. From the protocol side, the protocol, I want to stress again, it enables policy, but it does not dictate policy. The goal is to have a protocol that provide options for the policymakers, such as you, to debate what to put in there, and for the protocol to support it. So without further ado, I'll hand over the mic to Olaf Kochman.
Yeah, and I'm going to stand here because if I sit there, you will all be looking at my back, and that's not very sympathetic. My name is Olaf Kochman. I work for Nelnet Labs. I'm here because I'm co-chair, together with Murray Kucharawi, of the WIRTS Working Group. WIRTS stands for Web Extendable Internet Registration Data Services. So what is the context of that beast? Can I have the next slide, please? Well, the context of that beast is the WHOIS. As you all know, and it was just alluded to, the WHOIS is somewhat context-dependent in terms of the how and the what. In order to query for specific data, you need to know how. WHOIS is not only a registration service for domain names, it's also a registration service for registration data service, I should say, for internet numbers and even for routing information on the internet. Having knowledge about what you want to query is fairly context-specific, differs between names and numbers. What you get back is even more context-specific in terms of how things are completely unstructured. That means that you have to write scrapers with regular expressions, as was just mentioned, and it's a headache for most of the operators out there. Also, what is returned is context-specific. Some registries might not be able to disclose private data. Some others might only want to disclose that to, say, law enforcement parties, and some might not want to disclose anything at all. And that is something that is also, policy and context-dependent. Next slide. So the what and the how is what we're talking about. The ITF is about the how, basically encapsulating all that information inside of a protocol so that you can have interoperability all over the internet for clients that want to request this data from registration data services. We're not calling this a WHOIS protocol. We're calling this a Registration Data Access Protocol, RDAP. And it's probably wise to refer to the protocol that catches all this stuff by RDAP and not by WHOIS, because WHOIS is such a loaded term. It encapsulates policy, it encapsulates ways of working, and we're really looking only at pulling the data.
Olaf, sorry, we only have 10 minutes, so if we could, speed up a little bit so that we may have time to answer questions.
My question is then really, do you want to know the framework in which we are running, or do you want to go into the details of what the issues of the working group are?
Just the framework, thanks. At this time, just the framework which we are working.
Yeah. So then I'll continue at this pace and I skip all the details of the things. So the what and the context is really your game. It's regulatory specific. For me, a guiding principle in this, or a guiding thought in chairing this working group, is a paper by Dave Clark and all called the Tussle in Cyberspace, paper out of 2002. And it basically says, make sure you enable the thing that does the how to encapsulate all the possible policies that are available. Next slide. So what we're chartered to do is to standardize a single data framework, deliver objects of that framework over a RESTful service over HTTP, TechBlah, and generally following requirements from CRISP. There's a but there. CRISP is a former trial of the ITF to standardize internet registration services. That was far too difficult to implement, hence the but. Next slide. We want to make sure that we produce a simple, easy-to-implement protocol, something for which libraries are readily available, JSON on top of HTTP. So that's what we're using. Basically, standard HTTP GET request, looking at pushing URLs out and getting objects in a very specific standard back. Next slide. So this is an example of such query. Very structured. I want to have the abuse contact for the operator of that IP network. Or I want the registrant contact information for the example.com domain. And then you get back structured language, which you can parse. So it's a read-only protocol. You basically request, use HTTP authentication, a standardized authentication mechanism that allows for implementing policy for differential services by the servers that offer the data. I authenticate based on my token. The server knows that I'm law enforcement and might give me normally private data back. On another authentication token, might be that I have a trusted contact and get different things back. So that is all enabled in this protocol. Let's take one more slide. This is our timeline. We're working hard to deliver a working base specification before the end of the year. Roughly, I'm not going to go into the details of what these documents mean. Next slide, please. These are the major issues. I think what is important in most cases is the internationalization aspect. Let's move on, because I want to show that. I'm rushing through the slide because of the time limits. Yeah, this one. So internationalization, there is a report from the ICANN community. It's called the Internationalized Registration Data Working Group Final Report, which provides a number of requirements with respect of internationalizations of data data elements that are carried in registration data protocols. We did an assessment, next slide, of these elements. The left-hand side, the first column says which fields need to be available. The second middle column indicates if it needs to be internationalized. And the third column says how weird the protocol we're developing deals with that. The bottom line in all these acronym soup is that essentially the protocol allows for all the necessary data elements to be internationalized. How and what type of internationalization is returned by the protocol, for instance, transliteration of Chinese characters in US ASCII, that's not part of this protocol. The protocol can signal that there is US ASCII or Chinese characters or a language and a script combination, but it doesn't say how transliteration is done. That is, of course, a local policy issue. Those were questions that came up earlier. In the for time reasons, I will basically stop here, except for showing you the very last slide of this whole slide deck, coordinates of the working group. If you're interested in this work, the top URL will point you to an oversight page where you can find the documents, where you can find the charter of the group, and where you can find the mailing list on which the works takes place. ITF work takes place on mailing lists, also in physical meetings, but decisions get made on work mailing list. If you're technically inclined to follow this work, please read the mailing list and put in your contributions.
Thank you, Olaf. We're now open to questions, if there's any.
Are there any questions for this team? No questions? Well, thank you, Francisco. Thank you, Steve. Thank you very much for passing by and helping us understand what WIRDS will do for us. I have a member of the IPC here, constituency here, Steve Metallis, you know. In background, you know, the ALAC has always had some shared concerns about the WHO is with the IPC. And I thought it would be important to hear from Steve in any update of the update, their own impressions of the RA 2013 and what might still be outstanding for IPC. Steve, you have the floor.
Thank you very much, Carlton, and thank you for inviting me up to give my our perspectives on this. I missed some of the briefing that you had earlier on the RAA, and there certainly are a lot of positive things to be said about it. And I have to say that ALAC really does deserve a lot of the credit for that. And going back to the work that I did that we did with Holly and others from the ALAC on our joint drafting team between the GNSO and ALAC, we identified a lot of topics, and a lot of those have been addressed. It's been a very long process. I think I have to say at this point, it really just two cautions, let's say, about the revised RAA, and it doesn't detract from all the positives that have already been mentioned. One is that, you know, this is a four-year process. It goes back to the Mexico City meeting in 2009. Our joint drafting team was, I guess, 2010. Then we had to press to get some action. We had a big dispute over what role non-parties to the contract could or would play in the negotiation of the contract. As a result of that, after 4 years, we have had a 21-day comment period, and the IPC filed very extensive comments. So did IPC members, and we identified some issues, and we arrived here in Beijing to find on Monday that the negotiations were over, an agreement had been reached, although we still haven't seen what that is, it's been described. And there's a certain level of anxiety, let's say, about the details, which are always where the devil is in this agreement. So we're looking forward eagerly to seeing the text and the final text and having an opportunity for input on it. The specific area I would mention is the one that I know did come up here, and that's the specification on the interim specification on proxy and privacy services. And it's now been condensed, as Sam was saying, down to two pages. Well, you know, we'll see. We had some concerns about the what was in the five-page document, and I think those mostly focused on the fact that privacy or proxy registrations really could be a path to undermining the goal of increased WHOIS accuracy that we all share. And we think there seemed to be some loopholes in that document, and we don't know by shrinking it whether those have likely been addressed, have they been plugged. The real question is, if you have a proxy service and you have rules about the circumstances under which the identity of what I will call the true registrant is known, is the contact information of that true registrant subject to the same verification requirements or sanctions if it's false, that is the case in the case of a conventional registration? I have to say, as I read the specification, the answer was no. There was no requirement for verification and no indication that if the revealed data proved to be false, that there would be necessarily any consequences for it. So we hope that that loophole has been plugged, and if it hasn't been plugged, I think we have a problem. And the fact that it's an interim specification is going to expire in 3 years, we understand that, and we know it's not the total solution, but during that period, there's, I think, a real risk of abuse, which we hope will not occur. So I would encourage the ALAC to be alert. I don't know what was said here today about when the text would be published, but I had heard it would be this weekend. Okay. So I would encourage Holly and others to be alert and let's take a good look at that once it does come out. Thank you. Thank you again for asking me to give our views on this.
Thank you, Steve. Yes, we did note in our examination of the privacy specifications and wondered about that specific area. And so we certainly will be looking closely to see how that pans out in the final text. I see Michele needed to say something. Michele, you have the floor.
Well, I don't need to say something, but I have a desire to say something all the same. Hi, Steve.
Hi.
Steve and I seem to kind of run up against each other from time to time. On the privacy proxy, my understanding, and like the rest of you, I haven't seen any final text. Okay, so don't go biting my head off, please. You'd love to try, though. The privacy proxy language, in my understanding, that's going into the contract is a kind of a temporary holder interim thing, because there is an ongoing... Now, I'm not too sure. I can see Cheryl looking at me over her fan over there. So if I use the wrong term, she's going to murder me. I'm not too sure whether it's a PDP or a working group of some kind, which is meant to be defining an entire proxy privacy accreditation and all those other things. So the thing is, I think the idea here was we recognize something needs to be done. We've got something in here which is holder, which will be improved on. And let's move on, because otherwise we're going to be stuck forever. And, you know, the thing is, ultimately for everybody who's been involved in this, and Steve and I did spend quite a bit of time on that damn prioritization project and trying to tease out what on earth people were talking about, which was lots of fun because they didn't give us much bloody indication at times. How many years ago was that, Steve? Was that 3 years ago, 4 years ago?
2010.
2010? Okay, I'm feeling old at this stage. So I think, you know, a lot of that stuff, it's going to be clarified, and hopefully, you know, you won't be too upset. And then you'll be happy further down the line.
Thank you, Michaela. In the interest of giving other members around the table who might wish to say something here, I would like to pause here and ask if there are any comments that anybody would want to make. Comments, Evan? Oh, Jean-Jacques, you have the floor.
Thank you, Carlton. This is Jean-Jacques Subrenat. I've listened carefully and I've seen these toing and froing on by email over the months, but I have a question to some of the people around us. How does this translate into other languages? I don't mean translation literally, but in terms of context, the economic context, the social context, the legal context, is all this applicable? And if not, what are the major areas of contention or possible contention which would need to be changed? Thanks.
I think I know what this is about. I've been following some tweets. It's wonderful, Twitter. Go to an ICANN meeting and find out what's happening in other rooms via Twitter. One of the challenges that we all face is how on earth do you get the balance right between improving the accuracy and maintaining the stability, the security, et cetera, and doing that in such a way that it is equitable and that it does not increase the digital divide. I mean, this is an issue.
almost within the same breath, speaking metaphorically, Fadi Shahadi announced on the one side, yes, we're going to have a new RAA which is going to be stricter and going to raise the bar, etc., 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 and then 30 seconds later said, and we're going to increase our engagement in Africa and increase the number of registrars. Yet the, you know, the bar is still quite high, and some could argue it's too high. I don't have an answer for you, but I do know it's a concern, because one of the registrars I talk to on a very regular basis is based in Israel and has issues with, you know, for example, something as simple as the postal address, that it can be written in, I think he said, like 3 or 4 separate ways, which would be valid. And I know that in other parts of the world, this is going to be an issue. I'm not too sure. I assume that was part of what you were asking about. If I'm completely off the track, feel free to clatter me over the head.
I've never tried clattering you over the head. This is Jean-Jacques Subrenard. But my question is more from a user perspective. I'm a member of the ALAC, and obviously one of the things I'm most interested in is to see what is the balance between requirements, or so-called requirements, by the law enforcement agencies, whose role seems to be increasing in some circles in and around ICANN, on the one hand, and on the other hand, the very fundamental rights of users, the protection of privacy, of civic rights, free expression, etc. So it's more this balance. Sorry, it's at an almost philosophical level, but it may be important for the user. Thank you.
Would anyone want to take a stab at answering that question? Well, for me, one of the things that is central, I believe, to the user is the assurance that in using the internet and in making transactions, increasing the transactions on the internet, commercial nature and so on, there has to be a space where they can be assured that those they're dealing with are the ones they wish to deal with. So there's a trust issue. And to me, that is what is in the balance. If I can't trust the parties to the transaction, then maybe the entire edifice of the internet and what it and the promise that comes from having the internet is eroded in some way, Jean-Jacques. So I think that to me is a critical thing, whether or not we can trust. Yes, Michele.
Yes, but now I'm going to have to put on a slightly different hat and rip that argument apart. I think what Jean-Jacques might be asking about is the privacy side of it, the freedom of expression side, the protection, not the identification. We're not talking solely about using domain names in commerce, because we can't argue with your argument.
Well, oh, that's just one example.
Yes. But there is the other side to that. And this is something that, I mean, it's going to be a bit of a segue, because I see you have it on your agenda, Carlton. One of the areas that we've been looking at within the expert working group, the EWG or whatever that was on your agenda, I hadn't thought, but anyway, is getting those kind of things on the table and trying to tease out the requirements, the needs, the cases, the way that has to fit together. And for me, as a European registrar, I look to what's come through in the 2013, means that for the first time, I can go to look at Irish law, I can look at European law, and I can look at the protections and other things that exist there. Now, when you start getting into the slightly more extreme side of the freedom of speech, then that's a much bigger issue, because even in Ireland, which is supposedly a first world democracy, freedom of speech is not given the same level of protection that you might find in other countries. So, for example, for me, if I were to post something on my personal website, nothing to do with the company, my own personal one, I could easily find myself in court in Ireland on the basis of defamation, whereas in other jurisdictions they wouldn't even consider it because they'd see it as my right to have an opinion. So, you know, I appreciate that side of it too. I mean, maybe this is a much bigger conversation, not one that I would be dismissive of by any stretch of the imagination. And those of you who do know me know that I have my views on a lot of this stuff. I think it's something that, you know, it hasn't been ignored this time. We're moving better in that direction, if by at least having some recognition of local law.
Thank you, Michele. That's certainly a good addition to the conversation. We have only 7 minutes, so I'm going to step through very quickly the next item on the agenda, which is DUI's experts working group update. Michele referred to it. In November of last year, the board, by resolution, defined expert working group to look at the WHOIS to see what could be done to ensure enforcement of existing WHOIS requirements, as well as to look over the horizon and develop a set of perspectives that would guide any update or implementation of a new generation of what we call registration data services. The group has been meeting, several of us here, Michele is on the group, I am as well, and we've been looking at the question in meeting, face-to-face meetings and on weekly teleconferences. What I can tell you is that we have agreed to a certain protocol in which we have full and frank discussions of views in the meeting room and communicate only the things that we are in agreement or within sight of agreement.
Yeah, I mean, I think one of the things that, Carl, I mean, it's one of these things where we've been kind of struggling with how on earth do we talk about this without kind of saying, oh, this is what we're deciding to do, and then having a lot of people go, why, you can't do this.
Right.
Now, what we've taking it from a more kind of structural perspective, many of the WHOIS related studies and reviews and whatever else you want to call them have looked at what was there or what is there now, and trying to improve it or tweak it or find problems with it, study it, try to extract something from what was there. And we started from the basis that, is WHOIS broken? Answer, yes.
What
is it fit for? Is the current system fit for purpose? Answer, no. Okay, we have agreement on that. Nobody disagreed on that statement.
Right.
So working from that, try to work on the basis of what do you need at the most simple technical level, which we decided as well, you cannot argue about it.
Right.
I mean, okay, sure, some people might want to, but really, you can't. And then build it up from there, and then move it forward. And now we had a public session here in Beijing.
Right.
We're looking for feedback. We got some feedback. We want to hear what people are thinking, their thoughts, what things that, you know, you hold valuable. So, for example, Jean-Jacques, you know, if you would want to give us input on that, for example, around your concerns, they're important. They need to be picked, to be collected, to be catalogued, to be evaluated. And there are other views that we need to collect, I suppose.
Yes.
Because ultimately, from my perspective, for me personally, I can't speak for anybody else, but if we produce something of any kind, doesn't matter what you call it, and somebody comes along to me and says, you never gave me the opportunity to provide any input, well, one, I want to strangle them, but two, I'll feel that we will have failed. I think it's we need to make sure that people feel that they've been given the opportunity to give us input, that we've collected it. Now, that doesn't mean I'm going to do everything they say, but at least I'll know about it.
Right. So the main thing that I want to bring up with this experts working group is whatever we come up with as consensus is going to be a part of another process. And so it's input to a process for policy making that we hope will bring something out at the end. It's not secret, so we're going to have involvement there. It's very important for you to understand that the intent is that we look at the issues organically and then build something that we can all agree is a good framework to move forward. And it's important for us to get that. It's also important to understand there always is going to be an opportunity for input from the outside of the expert working group, because that is very important to formulating the response that we think is fit for purpose moving forward. I wouldn't want to say much more beyond that. The next item, and I'll see you, Sivas, I'll come to you in a minute. The next item, well, we have 3 minutes. The ELAC statement surrounding WHO is, it says 10 minutes there, but suffice to say, the ELAC over the years have been involved in the WHO's question. I mean, Cheryl Langdonor is there, and we've had several together where we've sat down and forged a consensus in the ELAC itself, because there have been differences within the ELAC itself. What is important is that the ELAC, by and large, have always insisted that there should be accuracy requirements for the OIS data. The ELAC has always insisted that if there are real concerns with privacy, and there are instances where it is appropriate that a mechanism be in place for privacy concerns. The ELAC has always held that view. And one of the things that we were probably first out of the box on was that there should be a single WHOIS policy. That's one of the things that we were probably first in articulating. What is important is that other groups have come around and coalesced around some of those issues for us. And where we are today is that we see that very slowly, perhaps slower than most of us would wish to have it, there has been some movement in the direction that we have always advocated. So we continue to look at it, and we continue to take careful note of what's happening there. And as time goes on, we will make adjustments as necessary. I'm afraid we're out of time, but you want to say one thing. You have 30 seconds.
Okay. Siva Subramanian Muthuswamy, it's actually not a comment, but a question, particularly to Michelle Nayland. Many of the conflicts related to WHOIS data, WHOIS data arises out of the value of WHOIS data. Who uses WHOIS data? What is it that a reseller can use? And what is it that a registrar can use? And what is it that a registry can use? At the accountability and transparency meeting this morning, I noticed that I cannot reach out to registrants because, and that is also something to do with data. I'm talking about the notion of ownership of the data.
Yes.
Okay. First off,
I ask you though? We are at the end of time. It's a
can
hard.
Can I just say? Is he on? Are you on the mailing list for this group?
Yes.
Why don't you put that question in writing to the list? If I don't reply to you immediately, it's simply because I'm moving between 2 points and trying to collect my thoughts.
Great.
But it's a very complex question which I can't answer in 10 seconds.
Great. Thank you, Michele. And I'll keep at him to make sure that he gets there on that. Folks, we're out of time. It's unfortunately, there's another meeting in this room right after now. I want to thank all of you for stopping by and participating. The mailing list for the WHOIS working group is open. It's an open working group that we have in the at large. We are always open to new participants, and we welcome all of the comments that you might wish to have on the issue. Once again, thank you all. This meeting is closed.